Text 39 is not written on the board, so I'll just read the verse in translation. Ityamancha krito patim vidurasyar vijorusa shugrastan juvato bhyetya svayambhuva pratyadyata. My dear Vidura, after giving the king this advice, the priests who had been engaged in performing the sacrifice called for Indra, the king of heaven, in a mood of great anger. When they were just ready to put the oblation in the fire, Lord Brahma appeared on the scene and forbade them to start the sacrifice. Navadyo bhavatam indro yadyagyo bhagavatanu yamjigam satas yagyena yasyetas tanavasura. Lord Brahma addressed them thus, "My dear sacrificial performers, you cannot kill Indra, the king of heaven. It is not your duty. You should know that Indra is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indeed, he is one of the most powerful assistants of the Personality of Godhead. You are trying to satisfy all the demigods by the performance of this yajna, but you should know that all these demigods are but parts and parcels of Indra, the king of heaven. How then can you kill him in this great sacrifice? Tad idam pashita mahad dharma vyatikramam dvija indrenanu stitam ragya karmai tad vigiham sata. In order to make trouble and impede the performance of King Prithu's great sacrifice, King Indra has adopted some means that in the future will destroy the clear path of religious life. I draw your attention to this fact. If you oppose him any further, he will further misuse his power and introduce many other irreligious systems." And now we come to text 32, which is on the board. It's not that much time. Should we still do the responsive? Or we should. Okay. Please repeat after me. Prithu krite, prito, buyat, tarhi, eka, una, shata, kratu, yagyas, alam, te, Kratubhi suishtai yat bhavan moksha dharma vit. Prithu krite pritor bhuyat tarye kona shata kratu alam te Kratubhi svishtair yad bhavan moksha dharma vit prithu kirte pritor bhuyat tarbhi svishtair yad bhavan moksha dharma vit Prithu kirte pritor bhuyat.
Prithu kirte pritor bhuyat.
Tarye kona shatakritu.
Tarye kona shatakritu.
Alam te kratubi svishtair.
Alam te kratubi svishtair.
Yad bhavan moksha dharma vit.
Yad bhavan moksha dharma vit.
Prithu krite pritor bhuyat.
Prithu
krite pritor bhuyat. Tarye kona satakratu.
Alam te
kratubhi svishtair.
Yad bhavan moksha
dharma vit. Ladies, Prithu Kirte of wide renown. Prito of King Prithu. Bhuyat, let it be. Tarhi, therefore, Eka Una Shata Kratu, he who performed 99 yajnas, Alam, there is nothing to be gained. Te of you, Kratubhi, by performing sacrifices. Su ishtai, well performed. Yat, because. Bhavan, yourself. Moksha dharma vit, the knower of the path of liberation. Translation. Let there be only 99 sacrificial performances for Maharaj Prithu, Lord Brahma concluded. Lord Brahma then turned towards Maharaj Prithu and informed him that since he was thoroughly aware of the path of liberation, what was the use in performing more sacrifices? Please repeat. Let there be only 99 sacrificial performances.
Let there be only 99 sacrificial performances.
For Maharaj Prithu,
Lord Brahma concluded.
Lord Brahma then turned towards Maharaj Prithu
and informed him
that since he was thoroughly aware of the path of liberation,
what was the use
in performing more sacrifices?
Purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma came down to pacify King Prithu regarding his continual performance of 100 sacrifices. King Prithu was determined to perform 100 sacrifices, and King Indra took this very seriously because Indra himself was known as the performer of 100 sacrifices. Just as it is the nature of all living entities within this material world to become envious of their competitors, King Indra, although King of Heaven, was also envious of King Prithu and therefore wanted to stop him from performing 100 sacrifices. Actually, there was great competition, and King Indra, to satisfy his senses, began to invent so many irreligious systems to obstruct King Prithu. To stop these irreligious inventions, Lord Brahma personally appeared in the sacrificial arena. As far as Maharaj Prithu was concerned, he was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it was not necessary for him to perform the prescribed Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Such ceremonies are known as karma, and there is no need for a devotee in the transcendental position to execute them. As the ideal king, however, it was King Prithu's duty to perform sacrifices. A compromise was therefore to be worked out. By the blessings of Lord Brahma, King Prithu would become more famous than King Indra. Thus, Prithu's determination to perform 100 sacrifices was indirectly fulfilled by the blessings of Lord Brahma. Translation again. Let there be only 99 sacrificial performances for Maharaj Prithu, Lord Brahma concluded. Lord Brahma then turned toward Maharaj Prithu and informed him that since he was thoroughly aware of the path of liberation, what was the use in performing more sacrifices? Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swa Padantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyade Shatarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhyevacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. The background to the present verses is that King Prithu had performed 99 horse sacrifices and King Indra became envious that King Prithu would perform 100, which Indra himself had done previously, and therefore was famous as the performer of 100 horse sacrifices. And Indra was also fearful that by Prithu Maharaj is becoming so powerful by the performance of the sacrifices that Indra's own position as the king of heaven might be in jeopardy. So King Indra did something very horrible from the Vedic point of view, and that is that he assumed the guise of a mendicant, of a sannyasi, and he stole the horse that was at the sacrificial arena for the sacrifice. As he was absconding with the horse, Atrimuni saw him and informed Prithu Maharaja's son what had happened. And Prithu Maharaja's son pursued Indra with bow and arrows and was ready to kill him. At that point, Indra gave up his disguise as a sannyasi and returned the horse. So the same sequence repeated several times. Indra came in a different disguise of a different type of sannyasi. They have different dresses. Some are naked, some wear a red dress. And he would steal the horse, and then Prithu Maharaja's son would pursue him. He'd abandon his disguise and then return the horse. So finally, the Brahmins who were performing the sacrifice understood that Indra, because of his offenses, he was already weakened now. And they would recite some special mantras that were unknown to Indra, call him to the sacrificial arena, and then put him in the fire and finish him. And at that point, that's where we began to read today, at that point, Lord Brahma came down and stopped them and told them that Indra, you're doing the sacrifice to please the demigods, but Indra is the chief of the demigods and part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And later on, he will tell Prithu Maharaj that you are also part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, so you and Indra are the same. So there should be no enmity between you. And Prithu Maharaj gave up the idea of performing the 100th sacrifice. And he became famous as the performer of 99. And it was actually the one that he didn't perform that makes him more glorious even than the 99 that he did perform. Because he gave up his desire to perform 100 for the sake of keeping peace in the family. So we can see how practical Lord Brahma's instructions were. He didn't want disruption in the universe. He didn't want the powerful controllers within the universe to be fighting with each other. And he didn't want Indra, because he knew that Indra was determined to stop the 100th sacrifice, he didn't want Indra to keep engaging in irreligious activities, you know, falsely assuming the guise of a sannyasi and stealing the horses. So he was very practical. And he wanted to stop the activities, which in and of themselves were glorious, performing 100 sacrifices. They wanted to stop them because they were disturbing Indra. He didn't ask Indra to give up his envy. He didn't ask Indra to stop falsely assuming the garb of sannyasis. But he asked King Prithu not to perform the 100th sacrifice. Because King Prithu was actually more elevated spiritually than King Indra. So sometimes someone who's more advanced spiritually will take a humble position for the benefit of someone who's less advanced, so that the less advanced person can be more peaceful and won't feel provoked to engage in, you know, irreligious or improper activities. In other words, Prithu Maharaj was acting as the servant of the servant of the Lord. Although Lord Vishnu was personally coming to his sacrifices, in all 99 sacrifices up until then, Lord Vishnu had personally come. And when the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes, all the demigods come with him, all the great sages and saintly persons, they were all personally coming. So even though he had, you could say, a direct relationship with the Lord, and he himself was an empowered incarnation of the Lord, but still he acted as the servant of the servant in two ways. First, he acted as the servant of Lord Brahma, who's the servant of the Lord, and he even acted as the servant of Indra by creating a situation that was better for Indra's devotional service. Another point is that, related, is that Lord Brahma pointed out the good in Indra, that he was the chief of the demigods, he was very powerful, he was part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. He didn't dwell on his faults of being envious and fearful and duplicitous. And that's also an important instruction for us. Sometimes we get in the mood that, oh, you know, so-and-so's in a position of authority, he's got to be perfect, you know. Like, if he's not perfect, he's not good enough. Not good enough for me, no. But Indra, having such a responsible position as the king of heaven and, you know, lord of rains and head of the other demigods, except for Brahma and Shiva, still he was subject to mortal weaknesses such as envy. Envy isn't good, there's no doubt. In fact, at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find Nirmatsaranam Satam, that the Bhagavatam is meant for those who are free from envy. That's how we actually advance in Krishna consciousness, is by becoming free from envy. And in Srinivasacharya's prayers to the six Goswamis, Dira Dira Jana Priya Priya Karo Nirmat Saro Pujito, that the six Goswamis were dear to the gentle and to the ruffians because they were not envious of anyone. And therefore they were worshipable. Nirmat Saro Pujito. And Srila Prabhupada says that anyone who's free from envy is worshipable, because you can only be free from envy if you're liberated, if you're completely pure. Because envy is what brings us into the material world and keeps us in the material world. So if you're free from envy, you're liberated. You're a pure devotee. So that's the goal. But even though Indra was envious, still, he was trying to do his service. I mean, he has lapses, but still, and his motives may have been mixed, or were definitely mixed, but still, he was entrusted with some service, and Lord Brahma wanted to create a situation where he could do his service without being disturbed. And to a large extent, Srila Prabhupada was the same. He engaged devotees in different services and he protected them in their services, even if they were imperfect in their service or in their behavior. He protected them. Everyone. I remember when I was the temple president in Juhu, Narayan Prabhu came, and Srila Prabhupada said that he should be in charge of the garden, because he had a lot of land. And Srila Prabhupada wanted all the land to be used for growing flowers for the deities. And I don't know now, but at the time, he was sort of a temperamental personality and a little hard to work with. And it was hard for me to deal with him. And at one stage, Srila Prabhupada wrote me a letter saying something like, I know that Narayan can be a little difficult to work with, but still he can do tremendous service. And, you know, I want you to give him full charge of the garden and, you know, give him whatever facility he needs. Which I tried to do, given Srila Prabhupada's instruction, but it was difficult on a practical level for me. And then last night, because I never really knew Narayan Prabhu before, then last night in the video, I saw Narayan before he came to Juhu, when he was building the Roth cart in San Francisco, and how he was like feeling incapable of performing such a difficult service, and how he like approached Srila Prabhupada and prayed for blessings, and Srila Prabhupada said, you know, for this service you will be Vishwakarma. And how he did the service. And when I saw it, I thought, wow, that's Narayan. I had no idea. I had no idea of his history and his relationship with Srila Prabhupada. I was just seeing, you know, this sort of rough, gruff, you know, temperamental servant of Srila Prabhupada. And in retrospect, I thought, oh, if I'd known that, you know, I might have dealt with him a little differently. But anyway. But Srila Prabhupada, that was the thing about Srila Prabhupada. He could appreciate each and every disciple, each and every soul, and see how they could be engaged in Krishna's service. And sort of fix them in their service and protect them. You know, in the case of authorities, Prabhupada wanted us to follow the authorities, and, you know, sometimes devotees would ask, well, what if I follow the authority and you know, I'm following the authority, and the authority gives a wrong instruction. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada said, you still have to follow. You can appeal it, like in the court system, if you're not satisfied with the decision of the lower court, you can appeal to the higher court, but you have to follow it. And, but then what, well, what about my advancement? And Srila Prabhupada said, your advancement will be the same. Because you're not actually following, I mean, yes, in a way you're following the authority's instruction, but ultimately you're following my instruction to follow the authority. So therefore your advancement is the same. And then, well, what if the authority keeps giving wrong instructions? And Prabhupada said, well, I will rectify him or I will replace him, but still your duty is to follow. So that discipline is required. And here we see on the cosmic level that even though Indra was so faulty, in a sense, so faulty, acting on the basis of envy, engaging in irreligious principles, still Lord Brahma wanted to preserve him in his position of service, and he wanted to make peace amongst the powerful people in the universe. And Srila Prabhupada did that a lot. I mean, it's unfortunate that so much of his time had to be devoted to mediating differences among devotees, but he did it a lot. He did it a lot. I remember once Hansaduta Prabhu came from Hyderabad. He was like so upset, so disturbed. And he came into Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada listened so patiently and with so much empathy. And there were like three very strong personalities in Hyderabad. There was Hansaduta Prabhu, Tejas Prabhu, and Mahamsa Prabhu. Then sometime later, Tejas Prabhu came to Bombay. He didn't complain to Prabhupada, but he told me a lot about what he had experienced. And, you know, it's like you feel sympathy for all of them because they all wanted to serve Prabhupada, but there's some friction, you know. And Tejas told me something that I'd never heard before that really struck me. That Prabhupada had instructed the three of them that you meet together, you fight like cats and dogs, and when you all agree, then you go ahead. So Prabhupada had faith in that process of working together as a group that also came up in the video last night. And it's stated in Shastra as well, Kalo Sangha Shakti, that in Kali Yuga, one gets strength or power from association or from working collectively or conjointly. So that is our mission. I mean, our mission is to become Krishna conscious and to spread Krishna consciousness. But to do both, we need support. You know, we need the support of each other. So we shouldn't be too like focused on the faults. Like, oh, he's envious, or he's this, that. But we should see that he's trying to serve Krishna. That was also, you know, one of the main thoughts I had watching the video last night is these devotees, what sacrifice they made, what service they did. They're all so glorious. And even along the way, they may have had difficulty. Still, it doesn't really diminish what they did for Srila Prabhupada. It doesn't diminish their love for him.
You know, the material energy is very strong. It's very strong. I mean, there are extraordinary devotees like Suvas Prabhu and many of the leaders here who have never faltered in all their 30 years of devotional service. But, you know, you see the devotees, what sacrifice they made, what service they did, how much love for Prabhupada they had. So even if they did fall down or, you know, whatever, stumble, trip, fall, well, that's not such a big thing. When I was seeing it, I was thinking, it doesn't matter at all. It's not significant at all. And that's what Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Apichat sudaracharo bhajate mam ananyabhat sadur eva samantavya. That even if someone is engaged in the most abominable activity, but if he's rightly situated, which means that there are other verses that explain what it means to be rightly situated, but it means to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to accept oneself as Krishna's eternal servant, and to accept the goal of life as pure devotional service to Krishna. If one is rightly situated, he's considered sadhu, considered saintly. And that was another point that one of the devotees mentioned in the video, that Prabhupada was introducing us as sadhus, these young boys and girls from America and Europe. He was introducing them as sadhus. He wanted them to be accepted by the people of India as sadhus, as much as all these, you know, yogis and swamis that were very prevalent in India. And here we find, even if one falls, he's still considered sadhu. We don't want to fall. We want to try our best not to fall. We want to help each other so we don't fall. But even if we do, as long as the person remains fixed in that conviction that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and I'm his eternal servant, it's considered sadhu, saintly person. And there's a beautiful verse in the first canto. I was going to read it, but because of lack of time, I may not actually read it. But the verse says that one who has once relished the sweet taste of the lotus feet of the Lord, the sweet taste of devotional service, he can never forget that taste. Even if he falls down, he will always remember that taste, and eventually he will come back. And that's also a very important instruction. And we've seen it in the lives of many of our contemporaries, that they relished some nectar in devotional service that cannot compare to anything of the material world. Because of weakness, because of the strength of the waves of Maya, they may be knocked over and tossed around. But within their hearts, they know that they're not able to taste anything like the nectar that they relished in the course of devotional service. And many of them at the end, even though there may be some gap in between where they weren't so nicely engaged, but they come back, just like the verse says. And again, it was so poignant in the movie. Revati Nandan Prabhu came into the pandal in Allahabad at the Kumbh Mela, where Srila Prabhupada was speaking about Ajameel. And Srila Prabhupada, right when he was walking in, he was saying about Ajameel how in his youth he had rendered very, very pure service. Very, very pure service. And because of the very, very pure service that he had rendered in his youth, he came back to Krishna consciousness at the end. And Revatinandan Prabhu took it like as a direct instruction from Srila Prabhupada to him that he had rendered very, very pure service. And as it happened, no one imagined it at the time, as it happened, he did deviate later on, fall down, whatever. But that hope is there. He rendered very, very pure service. You know, all the cooking he was doing, cooking for all those people, it's very pure. So that is our hope individually. And that should also temper the way we look at each other. That, okay, but look at the good he did, you know, and look at what could very well happen in the future. He'll come back, the Bhagavatam says. So just a sort of temporary interruption. I think I'll just conclude with one little story that I heard just the other day. Basically, a disciple of one of Prabhupada's disciples had a dream in which he met Srila Prabhupada, and in the dream, the disciple sort of complained to Srila Prabhupada about an authority that disciple of the disciple had, who had fallen down. And that disciple was like very disturbed, you know, that he or she had put so much faith in the authority, then the authority had fallen down, left the movement for some time. And Prabhupada looked at that disciple of the disciple very sternly and said, you know, don't you criticize any of my boys. You know, you're just, forget the word, something garden, meaning like, you're green, you know, you're just some, you know, green little sprout in the garden. Don't you dare criticize my boys. Jai, Srila Prabhupada. So I don't want to take more of your time. You're performing the greatest yajna. These are mundane yajnas we're reading about. You're doing the greatest yajna, completely transcendental. Sankirtan yajna ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi. Haribol.
Council life?